very valid complaint, and I think there are a lot of negative elements to the digital world that we're obviously completely intertwined with. Yes, you can acknowledge that, but also to be grateful to have had the opportunity to do something that even just a decade ago would have been absolutely impossible. The amount of art that was provided online and with such access to it this last year, I mean, I think it's the difference between, you know, previous pandemics that would just not only obviously kill people, but shut down societies overall. And here we were able to, even if it wasn't what we would have wanted under optimal circumstances, maintain the threads of society and culture, which is just a remarkable gift. So I try and give a lot of credit to that and not just dismiss it as everybody's saying, oh, you know, we missed live concerts. Yeah, but let's acknowledge the gift that we had, that we have an orchestra because of those digital opportunities. And that is something that we need to consider when we move forward, because a lot of people were reached in ways that they would never have been reached in a normal season, because people weren't thinking about accessibility and they weren't thinking about the audiences that perhaps even in normal years would not have been able to experience your music making. So it's going to be an important part of, I think, how all arts organizations move forward. But yes, I mean, we are musicians that are trained to play for people. We're not like a TV orchestra that just sits there and plays for the cameras and nothing more. We are meant to play for human beings live in the room, and there is an energy and just an experience that's totally different for the performers and, of course, well, for the audience to give it. But for the performers, having people there really changes the dynamic, changes the metrics, and that's something that we lost, because a lot of times when you end a piece in a purely digital concert, there's nobody in the audience. You just stop and you look around at everybody and you're like, well, I think that went well, but it's not, you don't get that response of human beings affirming that it was a performance that landed. And so that's something we really miss. And you know, my hope is that when we get back to the live concerts, that we treat the concert hall and the live musical experience, whether it's a huge hall or a tiny living room show or a giant outdoor festival, but we treat that all with a certain reverence that I think we had lost because people were so entitled. And I'm not saying entitled in a bad way. We just felt entitled to have live music anytime we wanted it, or events anytime we wanted it, or you know, how many amazing outdoor music festivals does Louisville have? Incredible, rich opportunities. So I think that this is a chance to be really mindful and cognizant and conscientious about the gifts that we have in our world, and not to take them for granted, and not to just go right back to that space of feeling like, well, yeah, that's something that we all just deserve. We should be protective and caring and aware of the fragility of those experiences. So that's something we're going to try and continue, and it's hard to do because it's not the default mindset once we get back into a routine. But my hope is that we can preserve something of that, so we never forget what this year meant, both in its opportunity, but also in its deep tragedy.
Do you see some of the opportunity lying as continuing the video distribution of your performances?
I do. I think that there will be lots of opportunities to do that. But my thinking is that more of our approach will be geared towards making a richer musical experience around the live concert. So rather than just having concert placement videos, although sometimes I think we will continue to do that, I think that creating a more sustained relationship with audiences is actually what's really important. And the video space allows you to create ties to the members of the orchestra in a way that you just can't get in a two-hour concert. So this is an opportunity for people to really get to know the musicians individually and to let the musicians have programming opportunities. That was something that we found, I think, very valuable this last year, that a lot of the videos that were produced were completely musician-driven and musician-led, musician-programmed. One of the things we decided early on is that we wanted to have a series of video content that the musicians would program themselves It would be completely programmed and recorded in tandem with the larger orchestra concerts that, of course, you know, I mostly program. And the whole idea was that we would set the themes for the big 8 concerts that we had. So it ended up being, I think, like 11 full orchestra concerts throughout the year, which is actually more than we do than we do in the classic series. So it was a lot of content. And then we asked the musicians to program chamber music or small ensemble works based on the themes of those large concerts. So if we were doing a concert that featured the music of, say, John Adams and Mozart back to back, then that those chamber symphonies would be inspiration for the musicians to choose their own music that they wanted to record. Sometimes, you know, in string quartets or trios or solo pieces, whatever it was. In a normal year, they don't have that opportunity to program that kind of stuff. And it really showed off their personality and their own artistic profile. And that's something I want to continue. And that's where the digital space can really, I think, enhance the relationship to the orchestra as opposed to replace the live concert experience.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to another audience interview brought to you by Speed Art Museum and Kentucky Tourism Arts and Heritage Cabinet. I'm your host today, Doug Driesbeck, and we're excited to catch up with Teddy Abrams from your Louisville Orchestra. So, Teddy, we always hear the Louisville Orchestra referred to as your Louisville Orchestra from, you know, many perspectives. Why is it important, do you feel, to emphasize that this is your referring to the Louisville Orchestra?
Well, I always use that phrase, your Louisville Orchestra versus the Louisville Orchestra, because the orchestra belongs to the people. I really believe that. And certainly there are many musical institutions that maybe don't have that same requirement, in my view, or maybe underlying mission to belong to the community. I mean, that you could have, say, a chamber orchestra or something like that that focuses just on new music, or you could have a wind ensemble that's really all about, you know, perhaps doing the wind band music of the Napoleonic era. I mean, that's legitimate. But when you have the name of the city in your orchestra and a history that's intertwined with the fate of the community, your responsibility to the people of your town changes dramatically. I think it's very, very different. It's a very different approach to think of yourself as just an orchestra versus somebody's orchestra, the Louisville community's orchestra. And I always do that because I want people to feel ownership over the experience. Whenever they come see the orchestra, I don't want them to feel like they're guests. They're not our guests. This is their experience. They own that concert. They own that experience, and it's theirs. And I think one of the big barriers to going to see orchestral performances or classical music in general, even though we don't really call it classical music anymore because it's a misnomer, and it's also just not a very helpful term. But one of the big barriers is that people feel like the experience is not something that they are comfortable with. It's not theirs. It's not their house. And I think you start by redefining language, honestly. Yes, you have to follow through with incredibly creative programming to help make it feel like everybody owns the experience. But you start with language. And if you tell people it's theirs, you say, hey, when you're here at this concert, this is your house. This is your place. It's just the first level of rewiring, I think, the way people see what an orchestra can be, and taking it from being this elitist other kind of institution and making it people's orchestra. So that's why I use that language, because language is very, very important. Even when you're not thinking about it so much, and you're not thinking about the specific use of language, it's always influencing how we see the world.
Well, and it was really inspiring to see the community really rallied together last year and everything we went through with the pandemic and the civil situations we experienced. But through it all, your name and the Louisville Orchestra name kept coming up, whether it was the musicians doing their individual things or parking lot pop-up concerts or, you know, a lot of things, your composition with Jacory and Jim James with My Morning Jacket and all these things. When an idea comes to you, it seems like there's a lot of great things that come from Teddy. Do you have, like, when these things come up, how do you take it from a thought process to execution, or does it just kind of organically happen?
Well, the challenge is that we have way more ideas than we have either time or money to produce. And one of the hardest things is to focus your resources and focus the people and also obviously the money and funding that you have on the things that will have the highest impact. And one of the real issues with any arts organization is that you're dealing with lots of different time frames. You know, you're dealing with programming that week, which, you know, when you're putting on a show that week, so much of your energy is just wrapped up into trying to put on a great show. But then you're also trying to think about the arc of the season. You know, is that season really delivering the balance of artistic projects and of community work that you believe in? And then you're also trying to focus on the long-term strategy. And in a lot of other organizations, a lot of other maybe corporate structures, you'd split that up. You wouldn't have the same people trying to do three different timelines, you know, the weekly, the quarterly or yearly, and then long-term strategy. You'd have people specifically allocated to those things. And in an orchestra specifically, and I think most arts institutions, the same people are working on all three different timescales. Which is one of the hardest things. So that, you know, for instance, if we have this idea to transform the city by bringing composers into Louisville and giving them an opportunity to create work that redefines the relationships between people, like just as an example, that's something we're working on, that may take 3 years to develop and even just start. And at the same time, we may be producing, a fully staged work the next week, and to be able to balance those two things is extremely tough. So from my perspective, one of the most important things that we can do is to align the organization so that everybody knows what we're trying to accomplish, what the real goals are, because I think a lot of times people just move right into trying to get stuff done. They haven't really talked about what your values are and what you're trying to actually do for the community. So we spent a lot of time, especially last year during the pandemic, discussing that, because we had this huge opportunity to reset thinking and mentalities. And we talked a lot about what it is we're really trying to accomplish and where we're trying to go. And a lot of that has to do with, taking the orchestra from a performing institution and reimagining ourselves as a civic service. So that it really redefines the essential relationship of the orchestra, not just to your audience at any show. That's not your audience. Your audience is ultimately everyone. And we've talked about that for a while, but we haven't been so clear until now of what we're trying to do. So our work now, whether it's actual shows or projects, is all about strengthening the city itself so that we are a civic service. And anyway, there's a long way of answering and basically saying that when we choose which projects and concepts we're trying to work with, it's filtered through that definition of us as an essential city service rather than just, hey, what do we feel like would be a fun show to do? That's not a great starting place. Yes, later on you have to say, is this going to be a fun project? Is this going to be a fun show? Is this going to be a fun new commissioned work? But first start by saying we're defining ourselves as much of an essential city service as we can be.
Absolutely. Well, in closing, what would your pitch be to both longtime patrons of the Louisville Orchestra, as well as some maybe first time or more novice attendees this season? What are some of your goals that they experience this year, and what can they look forward to about this special upcoming season?
Well, I mean, this 21-22 season is honestly the most exciting season we've put on. It really is. It's pretty outrageous. We've really invested in programming. And the balance between old and new is, I think, spot on. If I do say so myself, it's something we worked really hard to find, so that you've got music and repertoire that for people that love Schubert and love Berlioz, they're gonna hear that and hopefully hear it played in a way that makes them rediscover and re-love that music. But also a huge emphasis on creating new music. And our audiences are the best audiences in the world. They're the most open, engaged audiences. They're people that come in. They are excited to hear something new. They are excited to have their minds blow it or expand it, and a lot of audiences around the world are not. So this year we're really delivering. There are so many original works that are going to be premiered in a huge range. I mean, we're starting off the season with a set of commissioned songs and orchestral compositions that are from all local musicians, reflecting on what the last year and a half will have meant to them. And some will be celebrations, and others will be memorials. But there's going to be a great range. That's the start of the season, seven new works. And then throughout the year, I mean, it's everything from, you know, basically a Cuban dance band concerto during our Festival of Latin American Music, to a new piano concerto that I wrote, to this crazy cello concerto at the end of the season that deals with automation and involves an instrument that's being made specifically for the performance that's paired with the cello. So, I mean, there's so much kind of artistic, overflowing creativity that we wanted to give to the community, because after a year like this, people deserve something that really, really expands and just inspires their minds and their souls. So that's what we kind of went all out.
Well, that's exciting. We're definitely excited to get back and see you guys perform more at the hall and your other events the rest of the summer leading into the season. Really quick, we'd love to get a few quick hits with Teddy here, just a couple of quick answers of kind of a little bit to learn a little bit more about you personally and professionally. But do you remember what your first musical instrument was that you received and played?
It was a piano.
Piano?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was at age nine?
And no, that was at age three. I mean, I didn't receive it. It was already at our house. So I was just going to play it. Nobody actually played it at our house. We just had a piano, because I think my mom wanted to play it one day.
Do you have any favorite concert halls that you like to conduct or just simply attend?
Oh, there are so many great ones. Disney Hall in Los Angeles is really extraordinary. The New World Symphony's Hall in Miami Beach is also quite special, unlike any other.
Are there any that you have not been to that you would like to perform or attend at?
Thousands of them, certainly.
The top musical experience. Now, that's kind of whether it's performing or attending, but any big concerts you've went to that really stick out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be very hard to choose. I'd say that as a performer, when we took this entire orchestra, choir, the Native American tribe from the Klamath peoples out to Crater Lake National Park and performed a commissioned work right on the very lip of the crater itself. It was a collaboration with the National Park Service. That stands out. That's a pretty hard one to beat. That was a life-changing moment right there. So that would be an answer, but there are so many others.
Mm-hmm. What kind of hobbies do you have day-to-day other than producing music?
I don't really have, you know, hobbies per se. I keep myself really busy with work and with civic engagement. I guess you could say that's sort of a hobby, but it's all related to the kind of work that I do. But a lot of it has nothing to do with making music specifically. It's around the kind of overall engagement of the city. So, but probably biking would be, I don't know if you'd call that a hobby, but that's what I'm a pretty serious biker, not motorcycles, regular bicycles. So I'm on my bike hours a day.
Got it. A lot of great, it's a great city for biking, that's for sure. Any shows or podcasts or anything that you're into right now?
Oh, yeah. I don't watch too much serialized television just because the time commitment is so huge. And so I'm pretty careful with that. I watch a ton of movies, though, and have really diverse tastes there. And podcasts, I am a diehard This American Life listener. I absolutely love that series. I mean, there were so many good ones that came out last year. Every Little Thing is awesome, too, for those that don't know it. I used to listen to Reply all the time before they had their troubles, which I loved. The Floodlines was about as good as it gets for anybody that hasn't heard it. And I could go on and on and on. I must have like 50 podcasts that are all in my queue.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you everybody again for listening today to another audience interview brought to you by Speed Art Museum and Kentucky Tourism Arts and Heritage Cabinet. Be sure to check out everything about the upcoming season for your Louisville Orchestra at LouisvilleOrchestra.org, including season subscriptions and the full performance schedule. And for the latest in arts and entertainment in Louisville, including show previews, reviews, event calendars, and more, be sure to check out audience502.com. Teddy, thanks again for being with us today, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.